Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she has helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. I'm really glad you're here. Now, tonight's topic is embracing our inner psychic, opening up to what we already know. But before I go into this, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me from my mentor and friend, Jana Massey. So with gratitude to her, let's please make this agreement together. So, together we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you to all of you as well. So last week I gave a homework assignment where we were to see if we could notice those subtle nuances, the little differences between a thought that has arisen in our own minds versus one that may well be coming from an external source. From a mind that's different from our own. And I suggested that we compare the feelings that we have around those thoughts, which might be quite subtle, to the feelings that we have around thoughts that are exclusively our own. So, Tony, did you have any experience with that?
Well, somewhat. I mean, it was a task that I struggled with in a way. And I think part of the reason is this, that I'm quite used to trying to identify where my own thoughts come from, like which part of me, like is it coming from, you know, the part of me that's scared, or is it coming from the part of me, say, from a place of love within me or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite used to asking myself that kind of question.
Yeah.
And I'm also quite used to asking this kind of question, oh, is that a thought from my past, someone in my past? And that could be good or bad, someone that I looked up to or someone that was always scolding me or something.
Right.
Or is that like society's thought rather than my own, and I'm, you know, bending to that. But this thing about, is this thought within me that's arising within me coming from someone else? I think the best I did probably is with our cat. And I remember a couple of times thinking, this is you, this is what you want. I'm having the thought, like, come over here and stroke me, or get up and get me some food, or whatever. And I think it's new for me, this whole thing of trying to distinguish, you know, is it my thought or is it coming from somewhere else? But so I think I'm going to try and develop that, but first of all with the cat.
Great. Well, that's wonderful, and good job, and off to a shining start. And, you know, it is something that we can do, because we are all telepathic. We do get messages all the time. And this is especially true if the volume is turned up high. Like, for instance, then we can receive more easily. Like, for instance, when somebody is asleep at night and they wake up, I have several friends who this has happened to. They wake up in the middle of the night and they just have a deep knowing that somebody that they love is in trouble or of some sort, and then sure enough the next day they get a phone call, and you know, they happen to look at the time when that occurred, and at that exact time, you know, maybe they were traveling in Europe and they got in a car accident, or they might have gotten arrested, or who knows what. But and this is especially true for parents with their children who might be traveling abroad or just away from the home. We still have that deep connection. And that really is formed in infancy, right, in early childhood, and I think also in the womb. A friend of mine who was took her little newborn baby to the pediatrician just last week, and they were, you know, asking her to take all the baby's clothes off and then walking down a cold hallway to a cold measuring device, you know, to weigh the baby. And And she said that she could really feel, you know, this sort of empathy or concern for this child's feelings. Now, one could just say, oh, yeah, that's just, you know, a natural mother response. But after all, babies are very telepathic. That is how they do their communication, just like animals do. And, you know, she was undoubtedly perceiving these questions of concern that were in that baby's mind and in the infant's consciousness about, you know, am I okay here? Where's my mom? Turning to the mother for help. Is this all right? And so, you know, I think that we are definitely very, very connected. And that connection with the mother and child, that telepathic connection, you know, they understand or they feel that is really, really strong until about the age of seven, that baby's mind is definitely one with the mother's mind and with the father's mind, one with the parents.
Yeah, I think I had a very similar experience with my son, Leif, when he was, 5 weeks old, and he had to go in for surgery.
Yes.
And the way he looked at me when they were taking him away, the look in his eyes, it really was as if he was communicating to me this question of, am I going to be all right here with these people? And he was really looking for me to communicate back, yes, they're going to take care of you.
That's right.
It was really, you know, intense moment.
It's very profound, isn't it? And we really do understand that there is deep communication that's taking place. Eye to eye, soul to soul, heart to heart, you know, in those situations.
Well, Josephine, I mean, it's one thing for me to be receiving messages, you know, from my son or from the cat. But a worry that I do have is that if I could become overwhelmed with information if I really to open the floodgates. And I worry that what I'd be trying to do is to keep people out of my mind rather than inviting them in. There's enough going on with my own thoughts, let alone trying to manage other people's thoughts as well. Have you thought about that?
Yes, I have. And that's a very good point, Tony. And, you know, my early experiences with my clairvoyant healing ability, with my empathy, was just right along those lines. And it was actually quite terrifying, and I didn't know what to do about it. And this was as my empathy was first arising. I would be able to feel what was going on in other people's bodies when I was in close proximity to them. So going to the grocery store was kind of like this big challenge, because if I would stand in one line, I'm thinking, oh, man, my back is really starting to hurt. Oh, gosh, it's right around my kidneys. Gosh, ooh, what's that about? And then I think, you know, that line over there looks a little shorter. Maybe I'll move over there. And then, poof, the back pain would leave, and I'd be standing over there, and suddenly I'd think, oh, gosh, I'm starting to get a headache. Change lines again, and it would be,
oh, dear.
Oh, now I'm getting depressed. Or so, it can be really, truly overwhelming when we really open up to our psychic ability at first until we learn how to manage it a little bit. And what happened for me with that was when I began to use my psychic ability professionally, you know, helping my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Otto, when I began to use it, then all of that settled down and it stopped, so that now I no longer walk around like the human sponge. So I think that when we acknowledge it and use it and begin to work with it, it comes into a manageable basis. And I think this is where we are right now at a time in our human evolution, where we are learning how to incorporate our natural telepathy with our modern mind. So it's kind of an interesting time that we're in. And, you know, I think that sometimes, well, another example would be that often when I get together with friends, this is kind of a funny thing that'll happen to me. I'll be talking away with a friend, and suddenly I'll find myself just chattering on about some sort of problem that somebody has had and what they've done to resolve it. And I see my friend's eyes, you know, sort of like dilating and getting bigger, and they're thinking, you know, I just will have inadvertently begun to discuss a problem that they're having in their life that might be very private or secret or, you know, involve intimacy or any other number of things. And here I am just blathering on about exactly that same problem that maybe, you know, some idea that I had about it or some way to resolve it or to move ahead with that. And they'll just, like, look at me and say, Josephine, how did you know? Or else I might say it about their bodies without realizing it. Like, oh gosh, you know, such and such is going on with, you know, how are your kidneys or what, you know, have you thought about doing it? You know, just sometimes these things will just pop out almost like little frogs jumping out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And people will be so surprised that it's just happening. And that's because I am, you know, psychically picking up what is going on with them. And then I was talking with a friend just the other day, and she said that one day, and we were talking about this, and she said, you know, it's so true. And one day I had called her in the morning just to, you know, check in with her about something. I forget what it was, a lunch date or something like that. And she had just woken up. I didn't realize I'd woken her up when I called her. And so she was in this very sleepy, sort of receptive, sort of open state. And there was a little pause in the conversation as she thought of a question that she wanted to ask me. And then before she spoke and said anything, I answered her question. And I had long forgotten about this, but she reminded me of it the other day. And so, you know, in my family, we have all of this psychic ability, and other families might have mathematics, or they might have music or artistic abilities, or, you know, dentistry, whatever it is. But we all have these natural propensities. So I happen to be one of those folks who it just comes to very naturally. But I absolutely feel that we can all learn it, and we can all develop it. And some of us have it stronger than others. And that, why not? Why do we ignore this in our culture? Why don't we just jump right in?
Oh, it makes perfect sense to me. Josephine, I'd just like to share with you, we just received a lovely message from Simone, and she says, "Hi, Josephine, glad to make your program. Looking forward to your sharing. Love and blessings."
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Simone. That's so sweet of you to write in.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so Josephine, just quickly then, going back to this, there's something else that concerns me. Sometimes we have impressions, but we just dismiss them. I'm sure I know that that's true of me. I think that can't be right, even though the thought keeps coming in my mind. And I think maybe that's an issue of that, just not trusting something because it seems such a new way of doing things. What do you recommend to someone like me if they're getting impressions at times, but then they're inclined to not completely trust them?
Yes, well, I love the three precepts of the HUNA code. You know, trust yourself, expect the best, and bless the present. And it is an art form to learn how to trust ourselves. I think that trust can be learned, and it can also be unlearned, and then it can be learned again. So somebody who's had a major betrayal in a relationship, you know, they started off with trust, and then they learned not to trust. But through forgiveness and through time and through love, they can learn to trust again. And so I think that trust is one of those very important things that we can open ourselves to. And, you know, we often consider ourselves, when we allow our intellect to lead our lives rather than our heart to lead our lives, we think, oh, well, I'm skeptical, or I don't trust things anymore, or I'm sharp, you know, and I'm not going to just give over to innocence. That is a little more to me of a mentally guided life, as opposed to a heart-guided life, which is a little more open to love and to trust. So I think that it's important to allow ourselves to relearn trust, and or to learn it in the first place. One of the places where I really learned a lot of trust was with my wonderful horse, Duchess. She was such a blessing for me in my young life. I saved up my money from babysitting and bought myself a horse at the age of 13, and we kind of grew up together because she was a young adult and I was just a teenager, you know, a young adult in horse terms. She was 4 years old and I was just 13. And so I really looked to her a lot to help take care of me and to guide me. And she looked to me also to help take care of her and guide her. So we established this deep relationship of trust with each other. And if she gave me a signal of some sort about the safety of an area or something, I paid attention to that. And from that, I think in part I also learned how to develop a lot of my natural intuition by just noticing what she was feeling and then seeing if I could feel it too. Now, horses have a very well-developed enteric, they call it an enteric nervous system, E-N-T-E-R-I-C. And it's a bundle of nerves that are in the small area of the small intestine, and horses have very extensive intestines, as they are grazing on grass and deriving all their nutrients from grass. They have a long intestinal tract. And so if one horse is, you know, seeing something like a bicycle rider off in the distance and they perk up, their enteric nervous system becomes activated, and then immediately all of the enteric nervous systems of the whole herd feel that activation, whether they're dozing, standing, sleeping, grazing, or whatever, and they all look, and they notice the bicyclist in the distance. And then they all decide, oh, that's okay, we're familiar with bicyclists, it's no big threat. But if it was something like a mountain lion, they might want to think about leaving the area. So I feel that riding bareback all those years, and especially in my youth when I was looking to her for guidance in certain situations, when there was a danger around us, if there would be this response that I noticed that would happen, where it was as if simultaneously our bodies would rise up and look in the direction of the threat. So let's say there was a person who was coming along, sneaking along somewhere or something, or creeping, or an animal off in the distance that was sort of stalking us. It was as if, now, of course, I'm sure there were subtle muscular changes that would happen in her body originally that would tip me off, and then my body became more and more sensitive to what her body was doing. Because with no saddle between us, there was this direct connection. But as the years went on, I noticed that sometimes we would be in absolute harmony, like those birds that are flying together, where they suddenly all turn left or suddenly all turn right, that it was beyond my reflex time, where I was just like perking up and looking. And I think that trust, that was an example of gaining trust and learning trust and looking to community to help us and to help keep us on the right track. And so I think that we can develop trust really easily with animals. Animals can be a good way for us to learn them. And dogs are perhaps one of the greatest ones to learn how to trust because they're so loving and forgiving, which is a part of what I was speaking of earlier about learning how to love again and to forgive and to love again. And dogs, you know, it doesn't matter. We throw them outside. We say, you stay, you know, and you're a bad dog. You ate that off the table or whatever. And then the next minute they're like, oh, do you love me again? Okay, that's great. Oh, I love you. I trust you.
Josephine, now we actually have a caller on the line. Is this now a good time to take a call?
Oh, yes, it'd be wonderful.
I think it's
yes.
Barbara from Paso Robles.
Oh, lovely. Barbara, thank you so much for calling in.
Well, it is indeed. It is indeed. Well, I would like to share with you my experiences with treating animals with homeopathic remedies. Which is, of course, an energy treatment and an energy remedy. And when I was studying this, I had an opportunity to practice on a lot of friends and acquaintances, horses and dogs primarily. And I just instinctively, and so I didn't question it, when I found the right remedy for the animal, I advised the owner of the companion of that animal to be taking the same remedy because I strongly felt that there was a manifestation between the two of them and that animals bring to us great messages of how to connect with our lives in the earth, that this energy treatment or energy medication called homeopathy was going to benefit in some way with the human. And with homeopathy, it works not only on the physical level, but on the mental, emotional level. And perhaps this was something that, in that way, the person, the companion to the animal, was benefiting by that treatment. And I never questioned or asked why. It just seemed always like the right thing to do.
Wow, Barbara,
so
I'd
like to
get
your comment on that.
Yeah, that is a remarkable thing, and I never knew that about homeopathics, and what a great idea. And then, yes, of course, then the human could share some of the responses and ideas and understandings that they were sharing with their animal companion.
That's right. That's true. And there probably was something out of balance with the owner also. I guess that's part of we all know that that animals either benefit or are affected in some way by what's going on in our lives. And
yes.
You know, it seems like it's what I've tried to do is put a pink bubble around my animals. If I'm having a problem and I don't want it to interfere with them, I just imagine this pink bubble around them and let them stay in their own morphic field and not come into mine. But I intentionally do that. I think I really recommend that to people who have a close connection, a close psychic connection to their animals. My interpretation is that really is a needed protection and to keep the animal in their own morphic field, because our closeness allows us to merge our fields, and that's, you know, how we psychically, Sheldrick, is that right?
Yes.
Is that who wrote? Yeah.
That's right.
I did all that, and I know how close you feel to him, and anyways, I just was offering that to your listeners if they have this psychic connection with their animals and don't want
the animals
to be affected in a negative way, to offer their animals some protection in that way.
That is just wonderful. Absolutely brilliant, Barbara. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I would think it would also hold true for children with parents as well, that if the parents are going through some sort of a difficult stress, that it would be a nice idea for them to energetically shield or separate themselves and shield their child as well from those kind of concerns and worries telepathically.
Absolutely, because children, you know, it takes children a while to lose to dull their psychic abilities. But you know, they as children, they are very, very right on. They're very strong in that ability. And
yes.
some of us, like you, it stayed with you. Some
yeah.
people, you know, lose it. But children are so amazingly psychic. I know any mother would tell you that is absolutely true.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, that's wonderful, Barbara. Thank you so much for calling
You're
in.
You're welcome.
And that's a great tip. The pink bubble idea is wonderful. And giving the homeopathic to both. Excellent.
Yes, yes, uh-huh, yes.
Good job.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Good night.
Have a good
Thanks
evening.
For
I'll
in.
Listen on.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in.
Goodbye, Barbara.
Yeah, so, you know, you were mentioning a little bit about sometimes having difficulty in trusting our inner impressions.
Yeah, that's right. And you were telling me how good dogs were.
Yeah.
I think I'm more of a cat person generally than a dog person, although Honey has really managed to turn me around as far as that goes.
She's pretty good, isn't
she? She's very good.
You know, I do have a friend whose father had a very profound experience when he was a young boy, and Barbara was just mentioning how so often children are so psychic and how we can lose it or dim it down as we grow older. And this friend of mine, his father had a very unusual psychic ability and one that could be extremely valuable if it was put to good use, but it could be one of those ones that would be really frightening and where we wouldn't want to even trust ourselves if that we had this particular skill. And what his skill was that as a young boy, if he would shake somebody's hand, and when kids are young, they're taught how to, you know, okay, you shake hands. And especially he would be in his 90s, I think, if he were alive now. But when he was a child, if he would shake someone's hand, if that person was soon to die, like within 2 or 3 days, he would get this little lightning bolt of electricity that would run up his arm and stop in his underarm. And it didn't happen very often. I mean, you know, especially 70 years ago or so, young children were encouraged to shake hands like an adult starting at a very young age. And so, you know, it didn't happen to him very often, but it happened, you know, once a year or so or less than that. And after a short while, he began to realize that when he had that experience that person was going to be dying soon. And he prayed to have that skill be taken away. He found it so disconcerting and so uncomfortable, and I can't blame him, and I could certainly see why. I mean, tremendously unsettling.
And so he dismissed that psychic skill from himself and let it go. But if you think about it, what a great gift that could be. I mean, a difficult one to deliver, but if we were to know in advance of our death, think of how, what a blessing that could be for us to be able to communicate our love to those that we love, or communicate our forgivenesses, or to get our things in order, or whatever it might be. I mean, sometimes death comes so abruptly that it, and certainly if this child was shaking people's hands, you wouldn't necessarily expect those people to be passing soon. So quite an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then another one that I had with my empathy when I was first starting to get empathetic, as I was mentioning, like in the grocery store and all that, I tried to dismiss this because it was so unsettling. But what had happened was I was helping a friend who had cancer, and she asked for a support group. And so I got together with her, and I was very willing on the surface, my personality and my, you know, it was back in the days when I had learned, you know, dutifully to always say yes to everything. And a friend calls out for some help, and a part of me at a gut level didn't want to do that, but I couldn't understand why. And so I said, oh, sure, I'd love to help. And so I joined this support group with her and a couple of other friends of ours. And it was very uncomfortable for me because even on the first time, I began to feel pains in the same area of my body where she had the cancer in hers. And then I decided, oh, I'm going to just ignore that. I'm going to dismiss it. I'm going to pretend that that wasn't there. But yet it was. And then the next time, the following week, it was a little stronger, and it even lingered after I left. And then as the weeks progressed, it got so weird that I would even start to feel that pain when I was driving by the neighborhood. And I thought, okay, I've got to put a stop to this. And I finally explained to the group what my predicament was and excused myself from the group with many apologies. And everybody was very understanding. But it was at the beginning, as my empathy was really starting to come on strong and I was learning how to do my work, and I thought, oh my God, what is this about? Am I catching this, you know, like a cold? And as time went on and as my experience grew, I learned that if ever I had a lingering or a lasting sensation in my body after working for somebody, that it wasn't that I had caught it from them. And more importantly, it was that I had a little tiny nucleus of that same condition that was already pre-existing in my own body. And that their body, when I would try on, you know, or get near them, or when I was working psychically, when I would try them on, like I'd try on a coat, if that sensation lingered, it was because I already had it in me, and it was my body giving me an early advance warning about it. And so there again came the return to trust, you know, the return to love, to understand how miraculous we are, that even in something like that, though I wasn't aware of a condition like that existing in my body because it was so minuscule or so small, if I paid attention and noticed, I could clear it up at the early stages like we can do. So in this particular case, you know, we all know that sugars, that cancers love sugars, and that cancer cells have 16 times the receptors for sugars than normal cells. And so I began to do some, you know, strong anti-cancer herbs that were, you know, that are mentioned frequently in herbal texts and things. And I certainly cleaned up my diet and got off of all processed and sugary foods. And you know, ta-da, my body and my immune system were easily able to overcome that. And I cleared it from my body in that case. And then in all subsequent cases when I'm doing my work, if I feel a lingering sensation after I've done my clairvoyant healing, then I know, I've got a little something going here. You know, maybe I need to go do a colon cleanse, or maybe I need to do a liver cleanse, or maybe I should do 3 weeks of liver cleansing, or whatever it might be. So with that, Tony, maybe you could show our next slide for us.
Certainly.
Thank you. So this is a quote by Helen Keller, which I think is just beautiful. And what a remarkable life she had with so much, you know, to learn from. And this quote says, "The marvelous richness of human experience would lose something of rewarding joy if there were no limitations to overcome. The hilltop hour would not be half so wonderful if there were no dark valleys to traverse." Isn't that beautiful?
Mm, it's very nice. And
yeah.
Another beautiful picture from Frank.
Oh, good. Thank you, sweetheart. So another example of our natural clairvoyance is when someone hears music, you know, if there are melodies or refrains from an upcoming composition playing in their head, or if they awaken with an image of a painting. We have a dear friend who in high school, when we were all in high school, one night she was a batik artist, you know, using the wax and the dye baths to make art and to make a beautiful picture. And she woke up in the middle of the night and just tore the bed sheet off of her bed and drew this amazing image of this couple dancing with the city behind, and it was, you know, like marble tile floors and arches, and it was an extraordinary piece of art. And she just woke up with that image in her mind and created that beautiful piece, which she named Rejoice. And, you know, we sometimes wake up with ideas about, oh, how we can have more success in our business, or perhaps we have an invention that we come up with. My darling husband Frank is very inventive, and he's often just surprised me with these ideas that just pop into his head. And, you know, these inner impressions, they come to us in the form of inspirations, as if they're on high, because they are from on high. They're from our own higher self, you know, our unique spiritual connection to the universal source of all life. So with that, Tony, maybe you can show our next slide, please. And this one is from Rumi. And it says, "Everything in the universe is within. Ask all from yourself." Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's really profound.
That's one of my very favorites.
It changes the way you look at everything. Yeah.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really does. So why don't we go ahead and do a little exercise? I always like to give us a little exercise.
Oh, good. I enjoy
them. Good. I'm glad you do. So go ahead and relax your body, and you can close your eyes if you like and take a nice and easy, relaxed breath. And, of course, if you're operating machinery like driving a car, you're going to want to save this for later. And just allow yourself to think of a time when you received an inspiration. It might be a painting, or maybe a melody or a garden plan. Sometimes we will wake up in the middle of the night and know what we need for our health. Might be an urge to start using a particular food or stop using a different food. So just allow a memory about an inspiration that you received to come to you. And then go ahead and allow yourself to return to your normal waking consciousness and stretch a little bit and open your eyes and make a little note in your journal if you like. How was that for you, Tony?
Yeah, it was good. I had several memories.
Good.
But, one stood out, you know, lying in bed waiting to go to sleep, and then there's all these ideas for a film, a movie coming to me.
Wow, that's great. Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe you can show that next slide for us then. This one is by Saul Bellow, who was a Canadian-born American writer, and he won the Nobel Prize for Literature, passed away not too long ago. And he said, "You never have to change anything that you got up in the middle of the night to write."
Yeah, I can attest to the truth of that.
Me too. You'll have to write one of these screenplays when you first wake up. And, you know, that's often when I write my poetry, if I'm writing poetry, or I'll do my writing for my articles for the New Age News and or the Women's Press or whatever I'm writing for.
So you do a lot of waking up in the middle of the night?
I do. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and write, and often I write in the dark. And then in the morning sometimes, because I kind of hold my fingers on the paper to see where my place is, and sometimes those lines crisscross, and I have to, okay, Frank, can you read this? Can you make out what this says?
I had that problem with my dream diary. So I didn't want to turn the light on and wake Chloe up or trouble going back to sleep.
Yeah,
all this scrawl. What was that?
Yeah. So our telepathy is real. You know, it's taking place all of the time. And we are, I think, currently, like I was mentioning in our human evolution, we're refining our ancient ability to use our telepathy in accordance with our modern minds. So let's say you want to send a message to someone, the telephone or a letter or whatever. That's all okay. Yet, if you want to, just try a little experiment with this. You know, you can convey the message mentally with a lot of feeling and know that it'll be sent. And it will be received, either consciously or subconsciously. So we are actually practicing even when we don't realize it. Have you ever heard that phrase, you know, reading between the lines?
Mm-hmm.
Often when I'm writing a letter or something, if I have a thought that is not being put down to the pen, but I'm thinking it, I can guarantee you that when the person reads that letter, they're also going to pick up on that thought as well, if it has a strong feeling behind it. Now, like I was saying, the volume is significant when we come to telepathy, when we are sending a message or not. So our messages are received either consciously or subconsciously, and we're practicing whether we realize it or not. And you know that, I love that wonderful book that Rupert Sheldrake wrote that Barbara mentioned Rupert just a little while ago when she called in, and so nice to have her call. It's wonderful information about the homeopathy. But he says in that book, The Sense of Being Stared At, that he wrote, he says, "In this book, I discuss a large body of evidence and summarize recent research that shows that telepathy, the sense of being stared at, and precognition occur both in non-human animals, such as dogs and cats, and in people. They are not, quote, paranormal or, quote, supernatural. They are normal and natural part of our biological nature." And I think that's really true. They are a normal and natural part of our biological nature. You know, we find ourselves going to the telephone when someone is about to call, and we know someone's words before they speak them. Or I'm sure many of you have had this experience where you speak the same phrase at the exact same time as your friend says it, as if we've rehearsed, and no, we haven't. It just pops out at the same time, and we all laugh and sort of feel that it's like a big accident or something. But yet, really, the truth of it is that it's our very nature to send and receive, you know, mind to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Our energies, when they're accompanied with emotion and feeling, are always conveyed to the other. And these become attached to the telepathic collar, which is an area right below our chin and above our clavicle that can catch and hold the thoughts of others. And, of course, if we, you know, take a shower or something, it all kind of gets cleaned off. That's why, in part, why showers feel so good, and many other reasons, of course, too. Water is amazing and the warmth and all of that. But when we have received something in our telepathic collar, we either dismiss it or we accept it. And if we accept it, then that pops into our mind. And so, you know, like I was saying, I think we're kind of relearning how to use our telepathy here, and it's definitely a part of our prehistoric past when we were pre-verbal, way back when our human bodies were forming through the course of evolution. And I think that we're learning how to have clarity again in the usage of it. And some ask, you know, are animals telepathic? And can they communicate with humans? And absolutely yes. Like I was saying with my horse, definitely she and I did a lot of communication together. And dogs and cats, you know, like you were saying earlier, and you realized, oh, yeah, Florence was saying, okay, feed me or come over and give me a little pet, you know. And another book that Rupert wrote that I absolutely love is the book called Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home and Other Unexplained Powers of Animals. And he used, he loves to do these experiments that involve large bodies of population so that the numbers are large. It just shows the statistical range more accurately. And what he did was, for these, he put out an ad in the newspaper or something to say, you know, if you think your dog knows when you're coming home, would you like to participate in this study? And then they would set up video cameras in the entry halls of the homes of these owners who had dogs who knew when their owners were coming home. And then he would ask the owner to go ahead and send a little telepathic message to their dog when they were coming home. And they did it both intentionally and unintentionally. Like, for instance, when the owner had the intention of heading home, then the dog would usually go and show up at the door and start waiting there. So let's say the owner got off of work and they had to make two or three stops. They went to the bank, they went to the grocery store, and they picked up some laundry. And now they're going to head for home. And so their intention flips towards, I'm going home. That's when the dog would pick up the message. The dog wouldn't pick up the message like when they got off of work, because some people thought, oh, well, the dog knows the person gets off of work at 5. They're always going to be home at 5:30. So the dog shows up at the door at 5:30. But no, actually, the video cameras showed that the dogs didn't show up at the door to wait for their owners until the owner had the intention to come home. And it was really nice to have these, you know, video camera testimonials of these dogs who would be able to pick up the messages. So we also, you know, you guys, everybody, we all have this ability to send messages, and our practice allows us this understanding and clarity, and it's good for us to practice with animals, too, because they're so good at it. And like we were talking earlier, babies are really good at it, too.
Josephine, now,
yes.
We have a caller on the line
from
Oakland, California.
Oh, how nice.
Welcome.
Hi, it's Saman. I ended up calling in because I was stimulated by the conversation to throw something in the mix.
Hey, Saman, thank you so much. That's lovely. Thanks for calling.
Yes, as you were speaking about the phenomenon of intuition becoming more and more strongly accepted and practiced, and I was thinking about it globally, that, you know, a lot of times when I'm listening to anything over the internet, I'm kind of thinking I'm in the United States, and I really need to think that I'm part of the globe, and because it's, even the Wind Network with Petra, now we have, an international community, and our listeners, we all know, come from all over the world, and so to get to the chase here,
yeah.
About the global phenomenon of intuition as almost a necessary tool we're going to need for evolution into the next phase of humanity. And it's like the internet almost mirrors that need that for conductivity to be globally.
Absolutely. That's beautifully said. And yes, I agree with you 100%. I do think that the internet does mirror our intuition in a way. It's almost like it is a great example of how intuition works. You know, you put something out there and it just goes zippling all over the place and gets picked up and received by those who are receptive to it or in accordance with it. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, I feel very blessed to be around at this juncture in human history because of all the wonderful tools and awarenesses that I feel my parents really didn't get to experience in the same way. And I guess that's just part of the affirmation of why I was born, you know, at this time, that I'm needed or, you know, would fit in, as a piece of the puzzle to solve this mystery.
Yes, isn't that beautiful? I do feel that we do come in with very distinct purposes and that they are a part of a generational purpose as well. And so, yes, here we are all at this time here, this very interesting and intriguing time, and participating in these things in ways that only we can participate. That's wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, and it feels like intuition, when it's awakened, will serve us to be, I guess, a stronger participant or on the wavelength to get the next impulse that needs to be ignited, you know, for the shifts.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? We are awakening, and it's beautiful.
Yes. And Josephine, I just so want to acknowledge you and the work and the preparation that goes into a program, and that you have, you know, been doing it weekly. I just really want to honor your piece in this evolutionary dance that we're doing. The information you put out is so beautifully exhibited with your slides and your words and references to other authors and poets and scientists is very exciting and stimulating and educational. So just thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome, Sumant, and thank you so much for, you know, mentioning it. I really appreciate it. We all need encouragement, you know.
Yes, I just had my program today, and I was just, like, drained. But it just worked out that this evening Patty's working a little late, so I'm not having to jump, you know, or, you know, think about dinner, jump to the next thing. I could just kind of stay connected to the computer, I guess, and enjoy your program. And just, it's a delight, and thank you so much.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to hear from you tonight, Sumant. It's lovely to hear your voice.
I look forward to our next exchange. Thank you so
much. Sounds great.
Taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always a delight. Call anytime.
Thanks.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Well, that was lovely.
That was lovely. Josephine, and on the subject of the global phenomenon, we've had a message from Carl in Geelong, Australia.
Oh.
And he writes, "Hi, Josephine and Tony. Is there a way to control the psychic messages and flow as one would a water tap? Or are we at the mercy of an ill-timed revelation in a dream or waking state? Sometimes such revelations are too overwhelming when we are driving down the road or trying to meet a deadline."
Absolutely. I remember, thank you, Carl, for that great question. I remember one day I was driving down the Highway 1, and all of a sudden, I don't know where this came from, because I don't really have musical experience in my background, but it could have been, I could have been picking it up from the car next to me in the road, I don't know. But I started hearing this symphony playing in my mind, and I don't even know how to write music or read music, and it was a beautiful symphony, and I don't think it was any symphony that I've ever heard. I don't think it was a symphony that has ever been written, but there it was, and I thought, oh my God, this must be like what Mozart's dilemma was. You know, here comes, you know, all of this music flooding in, and what are you to do but drop everything, pull over, stop, get some paper, learn how to write music? I don't know, you know. I mean, it was beyond me. It was something that I couldn't handle because, like I said, I don't have the experience with music to know. But I could imagine what a dilemma that would be for somebody like Mozart. You would have to stop everything and just settle down and just write, and just copy it down as fast as you could. And I've heard that about, you know, some of the great prophets and things, you know, that what are you to do? Or Rumi, you know, I think a scribe used to follow him around wherever he went and just took down his every word because they were so amazing and everybody wanted to hear what he said, the famous Sufi poet from the 12th century. So, you know, this is a very good point, Carl, that you bring up. I mean, sometimes psychic messages do really flow in strongly, and it is hard to contain them. And it's almost like we do need something, an ability to shut off the valve. And like I was saying earlier with my early experiences with my empathy in the grocery store, it's so hard to turn it off. I didn't know what to do. I was a little overwhelmed. But as I began to use them and channel them and use them appropriately, as I began to set up my parameters and my boundaries for my work and to really realize my protocol of asking permission from the universe and grounding and aligning myself as I got into my practices with meditation more deeply. And with that, I began to be able to control it. And then again, like I said, there was that little bleed through with what I now call crossing over, where if something was lingering in my body, it was a little tip for me that I needed to do something to address it. So I think each case is a little unique, but, you know, I encourage you to, it's almost like how it is with grief. We can't stop it. We can't go around it. We have to go through it. And it seems to me like that's where we are with our human evolution right now. We need to just acknowledge our psychic ability, that it is real, that there's no faking it. It's like what Rupert said, you know, these are not paranormal experiences, nor are they supernatural experiences. They are normal and natural. They are part of our biological nature. So, you know, we can, I think, when we begin to really embrace them and to begin to acknowledge them and work with them, as was the case for me, then we will individually learn how to manage and handle them. And that's a very excellent question. I'm so glad you brought it up. Thanks so much for writing in. So, shall I go on to an exercise now, Tony?
That would be lovely.
All right. Well, I have another one for you all then.
Good.
So let's go ahead and relax and take a couple of easy breaths. And think of a time when you and an animal might have communicated with each other, sending and receiving a message. This might have taken place in childhood. Perhaps it's with a pet, could be current. Maybe even a wild animal like a squirrel or a dolphin or a butterfly. See if you can just catch or remember what the message might be that you received from that animal. And then this is a great thing to acknowledge in our journals. So take a moment and jot it down. A time or two when you've had an experience like this, just to acknowledge it and solidify it and to let it become more real. And with that, Tony, maybe you can show our next slide.
Certainly.
This is by Benjamin Hoff, who is the author of The Tao of Pooh. And he said, lots of people talk to animals. Not very many listen, though. That's the problem. Yeah. So, yeah, animals, one of the nice things about animals and why we can communicate so easily with them when we do is that they are very right-brained oriented, you know, and the right brain is more about that state of oneness, you know, that present consciousness. They're not so much lost in our left brain sense of analytical or time-bound, you know, in the left brain where we tend as humans to be more left-brain dominant. That's a little more about the past and the present and the future. Well, not so much the present. We're a little more past or future focused, whereas in the right brain, we're all in the one moment, in the oneness of everything. And it's a very non-judgmental and interconnected state. And so that's one of the things that we can pattern after when we spend time with animals is we can become a little more right brain focused ourselves, which is really nice. Maybe you can show that next slide then by Ram Dass, if you don't mind.
So, Josephine, just to check then, with the right brain, left brain thing, are you saying that if we're keen then to be developing our psychic ability, just spending more time in that sort of present moment, oneness space is really the way for us to go?
Absolutely. When we are in our right brain, we are connected with everything and we really feel it. We get that expansive quality that happens. And people who have had experienced a stroke in the left brain know how this is, that we enter into that ability to sort of see and feel and know all around us in the present moment, in time, not time-bound, but in the timeless state.
Mm-hmm.
And also that happens when we enter into that near-death state. We become one with everything.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself when you were talking about inspirations earlier.
Yes.
They kind of like, there seems to be a timeless quality to them. Do they? It's hard to know whether...
Yes.
Because there's often there's a feeling that something comes to you all of a piece, and then you think afterwards, well, no, because there's lots of different ideas, so surely there must have been a sequence. But at the time, it just seems like something comes to you.
That's right.
And I guess that would be the hallmark there of
that
the
is.
Right brain.
Exactly.
Right.
So this slide here is a quote by Ram Dass, and it's right on topic here. It says, if I go into the place in myself that is love, and you go into the place in yourself that is love, we are together in love. Then you and I are truly in love, in the state of being love. That is the entrance to oneness. Isn't that lovely?
Wow, yes, I'm very deep, very profound.
Yeah.
I do like Ram Dass ever since, it's been many, many years that I've known of him. And I really like the fact that there's lots of tapes of his that you can listen to.
Yeah, me too.
And lots of recordings.
Isn't
wonderful
it wonderful?
For journeys.
Yeah, one of my favorites of his is the audio tape called Cultivating the Heart of Compassion. I highly recommend it to anyone who's interested.
Well, Josephine, I do have some slightly bad news for you.
Uh-oh.
We've almost run out of time.
Oh.
And I know there's lots more that you wanted to share with us this evening.
Oh, well, that's lovely. It's so nice to, we'll get to it when we can and not to worry about it. So.
And there is next week.
Yes, it's just so nice to spend so much time with everyone. It's delightful.
Okay, so perhaps I should say at this point then that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Simply go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. And if you have enjoyed tonight's show, we really hope that you tell your friends. Josephine, are there any final words that you'd like to say?
Yes, there are. When we embrace the daily practice of regularly listening to the telepathic and clairvoyant energies which are all around us all of the time, you really gain stronger abilities to perceive. We get better at whatever it is that we practice regularly. And when we do, we grow to trust ourselves, and our receptivity becomes more and more. So this changes the way that we are in the world, and it opens you to a greater understanding of the complete and total interconnectedness of everything. So this is not only from a consciousness perspective, but it's also from the view, from the standpoint of our physical reality as well. And so let's show that last slide, which is a quote by the famous physicist Erwin Schrödinger. And he says, quantum physics reveals the basic oneness of the universe.
Yes, that's an amazing thought, isn't it?
Isn't that great? So I really appreciate all of you taking the time to listen tonight. And in closing, I'd like to share this little blessing with you. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. And I trust that everyone listening learned lots about embracing our own inner psychic.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.